OWC Radio 2.0, episode number 30, an interview with Principal Creative Cloud Evangelist for Adobe Systems, Terry White. Hey everyone, Tim Robertson here, OWC Radio, episode number 30. I do have this interview with Terry White for later in the episode. I think you guys are really going to like this. He works for Adobe Systems. Everybody knows Adobe, right? Photoshop, Illustrator, all the fun things that creative people love to use. I've got older versions of the apps, to be honest. I don't have the brand new Creative Cloud. For what I do on a daily basis, I probably don't need it, to be honest. But I don't know. There's something about the Adobe suite that, at least for me, brings out the creativity. It makes me want to play. Even when I don't have a need, I just want to mess around with photos or create a logo or just fun things like that. And Adobe's products have always kind of brought out that creative side to me. Do you use the Adobe suites? Do you only use it for work or do you play with them? I think they're kind of designed for play sometimes, you know? I think all good software is like that. Anyways, that's going to be later in the show. And of course, I do have three random questions for him, as I do most of the guests here on OWC Radio. But first, I wanted to start with some news that I saw this week on 9to5 Mac. And it's Apple's iOS 9 to have huge stability and optimization focus after years of feature additions. Now, what that means is, at least, you know, this is what I'm taking out of this. And, of course, this could be untrue. It could be just a rumor. But I don't think so. Number one, 9to5 Mac is really good when it comes to reporting on stuff like this. And number two, I think this is something that really needs to happen. I really do. You know, up through the most current iOS 8, Apple keeps adding really cool features. And for the most part, it just all works. Can't say the same with the Mac OS though, but let's stay focused on iOS for a minute. The problem though, and I'm seeing this a lot of places online, is people are having problems. It's the battery drain issue, which we've talked about here on this show. Some of the features not working quite as advertised. Some of the handoff things to go to the Mac isn't working quite right. It's kind of becoming a little bit bloatish, if you know what I mean. I mean, the last iOS update, if you didn't have almost 2 gigabytes free space on the drive, you couldn't update it over the air. So I think that, if true, I think that it's a very smart move on Apple's part not to concentrate on new features in iOS 9, but to make it better. To make all the things that they've been adding for the last few, I'm going to say going back to iOS 6. Making everything just work better. Better battery life. The apps work better. The tweaks here and there that it really needs. Optimizing the OS. Getting rid of some of the redundancies. These are things that, let's be honest, aren't sexy at all. But for a mature computing platform, It's vitally important, right? You have to do this occasionally. And the reason I don't think this is just a rumor and I think this is really going to happen is Apple actually has a history of doing this. For you long-term Mac users, you're probably going to remember back to 2009. And in 2009, Apple released Mac OS 10.6 or Snow Leopard. Now, much of the software in the OS at that point was extensively rewritten for 10.6. in order to take advantage of the modern Mac hardware. And Apple sold it as, hey, no new features. This is basically bug fixing, optimization, getting the software, you know, the OS, really able to run more efficiently on the modern hardware that they were releasing at the time. So do I think that Apple's iOS 9 is going to follow suit? I do. And I think it would be a brilliant move on their part, to be honest. But I don't want them to stop there. By that, I mean, since OS 10.6, It's been nothing but new feature, new feature, new feature on the Mac side. If they're going to go ahead with iOS 9 and concentrate on under-the-hood optimizations and fixes, I'd really like them to do that with the next version of macOS 10, 10.11. That would be, in my mind, fantastic. Look, Snow Leopard was 5 years ago. And if Apple keeps to this every year release of a major operating system for both iOS and macOS, I don't know. I think they really need to, I don't want to say slow their roll, but I do think that they need to spend a little bit of time optimizing what they have. They've made some major changes to the macOS in the last few years. You know, 10.9, 10.10 were huge changes to that operating system. And I see a lot of discontent with a lot of users. I hear about it on other podcasts. I read about it on the Mac web. Yeah, I think that Apple really does need to back up a little bit, get back under the hood with 10.11, optimize it, get rid of some of the redundancies, make it more power efficient. Because let's be honest, the big hot sellers for Apple when it comes to the macOS is what? Laptops. So make them even more efficient power-wise. They're kind of the leaders in that category already. And that's what I've always liked about Apple's laptops. When they say it gets 10 hours of battery life, it really does get 10 hours of battery life. So I hope that they follow suit with both versions of their OS out there, the Mac and iOS, and fix some of the little problems that have been creeping in, that it doesn't seem like their point releases, in other words, 10.10.3, isn't fixing some of the issues. I hope they do it. I really do. Now, speaking of 10.10.3, that's supposed to come out here pretty soon, and Apple's going to release the new Photos app. Terry and I actually talked about this during my interview with him. I'm really looking forward to this. Look, I'm a huge iPhoto user. But that's because it's like the best there is when it comes to a consumer-grade Mac software to organize your photos. Not on a professional level, because I'm not a professional photographer. But there are some major issues, and they've been around for a long time with iPhoto. The only thing that scares me is Photos is going to be a 1.0 release, and that kind of worries me a little bit. I'd almost rather wait to the 2.0 version, but I know I'm not going to. I know that when they release Photos, I'm going to wait maybe a week just to make sure that there's no giant bugs that deletes everyone's photos. Once I see that it's pretty stable and people are fairly happy with it, then I'll upgrade. But if I hear a whole lot of complaints and problems, I'm just going to hold off until Apple, you know, addresses those issues. I'd love to get feedback from you guys. It's owcradio@macsales.com. If you have any questions, concerns, comments, send them to owcradio@macsales.com, and I'll read them right here on the podcast. And I do have one from Clive, and I'll get to that in a second. But another thing I wanted to talk about is it was kind of sad news, but it looks like it's going to have a happy ending. The unofficial Apple weblog, TUAW.com, which was owned for a long time by AOL, and it was a very popular Mac site, an Apple site, closed down. Now, AOL's official reasoning was they're kind of putting more of the emphasis on their core brands, which in this case is Engadget, and they didn't want to continue pumping money into niche markets. I don't know how Apple is a niche market at this point. I mean, they're, you know, the number one tech company in the world. I don't know how that's niche, but whatever. So they closed it down, and I was kind of bummed out to hear that. Now, for those who've been listening to OWC Radio for a while, the very first episode of OWC Radio 2.0, as well as the very first episode of the original show back in 2009, OWC Radio, the first guest on both versions of this show was Steve Sandy, and he was from Tua. So I invited Steve to come here onto OWC Radio. He's going to be either next week or the week after. And we'll talk about what happened at Tua, AOL's decision, his take on it. But more importantly, the good news, which is he and a few of the other Tuwa writers went and created a brand new Apple-centric focused website called appleworld.today. And I'll put a link into the show notes for OWC Radio number 30 at blog.macsales.com to that website. I've already been there. They've been publishing now for like 2 days. They've got a bunch of stuff. I really like it. I think it's a good website. The reviews, they say, are going to be more focused, less long-winded. That's always a good thing. it looks like it's going to be a good website. I like the content. And I don't know, sometimes you get that creative freedom from, you know, the last thing they were doing, for instance, with Tuwa. They get their creative freedom. They own this website. Maybe a little bit more creativity comes out. I don't know. I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to having Steve Sandy back here on OWC Radio to discuss it. I'm excited, and I'm honestly wishing them all the best and all the success. If you want to find out the latest things going on for OWC, make sure you're following us on Twitter. We're at MacSales on Twitter. And on Facebook, of course, we're there too. It's facebook.com/OWCMacSales. Now, anytime we have a new post on our blog, which is blog.macsales.com, we do post them first up there on Twitter and Facebook. So you can, oh, look, I'm on Twitter and I see there's a new blog posted at OWC. You can click the link right through Twitter or Facebook and read our latest stuff. Speaking of feedback earlier, I got an email from a listener. It says, "Hey, Tim, thanks for OWC Radio. I listen when I'm driving to work. I was listening to the latest episode, number 29, and you talked about the USB Universal Drive adapter from NewerTech. I have a lot of old hard drives, but none more than 5 years old. Should I get this adapter? I asked because I was also looking at the NewerTech Voyager S3 and not sure which I should go for. Thanks, Clive." Number one, thanks for listening, Clive. I do appreciate it. Make sure you keep both hands on the wheel and a safe distance from the car in front of you. Look, I think that in your case, I think you would be better served, honestly, with the NewerTech Voyager. It's kind of a permanent fixture on your desk. You don't have to unplug it and plug it in all the time. And you've only got one type of hard drive, which is perfect for the NewerTech Voyager. So personally, in your case, I would go with the Voyager. Now, if you were working with much older hard drives, you're repairing other people's stuff all the time, then absolutely you'd want to go with the USB Universal Drive adapter. But for what you're doing, and actually it's kind of similar to what I do, I've got a lot of hard drives here, but they're all 5 years, maybe 6 years or newer. They all work perfectly in my Voyager S3. That's what I use. I think you'll really like it. And it's not even a cost thing here. They're not too dissimilar in cost. Both under $100, so no problem there. I do think, though, that honestly, the Voyager would be a better solution for you, Clive. And thanks for listening. I do appreciate it. I was talking about Twitter and Facebook earlier, and I do see your questions and concerns. And one of the things when the iPhone 6 and 6 Plus came out that I was seeing quite a bit on both of those social media sites was, when are we coming out with the NewGuard KX cases for the iPhone 6 and 6 Plus? And they are available now. So if you haven't already and you've been waiting, now's the time to go up to OWC and pick up your NewGuard KX case for the iPhone 6 and 6 Plus, available in blue, black, midnight, and red. These are the cases that were test dropped from 20 feet onto concrete. That's right. We put the iPhone 5 in one of these and dropped it from 20 feet on this crane directly onto concrete. The phone worked fine. There was no scratches. It was perfect. No, the glass didn't break. Now, I don't suggest you do this if you do pick up a NewGuard KX case. Seriously, don't do that. This is for our internal testing, but we do have video of dropping these cases. And I'll put a link directly into the NewerTech.com site so you can see these testing and you can pick up a phone or a case for your phone if you're interested. Comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee. In other words, you don't like it, it's not working for you, send it back, we'll give you your money back. Revolutionary X-orbiting exorbing. Boy, that's, it's like absorbing, but it's X, the letter X. Exorbing gel technology. It absorbs and evenly distributes the kinetic energy, so when it hits something, it's not right there on the corner. This gel makes the impact go around the entire phone, thus less damage. One piece design, it's got a hard shell integrated with a soft interior core, exceptional protection without being bulky, fast and simple to install, only takes seconds, easy access to all the ports and buttons, and a crosshatch texture design offers secure hand grip, yet easy pocket purse removal. Nothing worse than putting your iPhone in your pocket and pulling it out and you turn your, you know, your pocket inside out because it kind of sticks to the inside of your jeans. Don't have to worry about that with the NuGuard KX case for the iPhone 6 and 6 Plus. And of course, if you've got an older iPhone, we've got you covered with these cases as well. And I do want to give you a quick reminder, the OWC Thunderbolt 2 dock is still available for pre-order at $249. Shipping is mid-March, so if you order it now, you'll get it in mid-March. Once the pre-orders end, the price goes back up to the original $299 mark. So if you're interested in the OWC Thunderbolt 2 dock, you're going to save $50 if you pre-order it. Once it goes on sale, or once it's on sale, not a sale price, you know what I mean, it's $299. Pre-order it now, you'll get it in mid-March, $249. That's $50 saving. So if you've been hesitating, you're like, I really want one, but maybe I'll wait a little bit. Don't wait. Pre-order now, you're going to save $50. That's not insignificant. Now, the OWC Thunderbolt 2 dock comes with two Thunderbolt ports. Those are Thunderbolt 2 ports, of course. 5 USB 3.0 ports, 1 FireWire 800, 1 Gigabit Ethernet, 1 HDMI port with 4K support, and 1 3.5mm audio in and audio out jacks. This is the dock you've been waiting for. We've already seen some reviews posted online, and everyone I've read has been very, very positive. People really seem to like the OWC Thunderbolt 2 dock. And it's a really nice device. It really is. If you haven't seen it yet, and you've heard me talking about it on this show, go check it out online. I'll put a link to the pre-order page at blog.macsales.com. Remember, this is episode number 30 of OWC Radio. So go to the show notes in episode number 30, and you will find a link directly to it. Take a look. It's a really nice looking device that will look great with either your laptop or your desktop. So it looks good with a MacBook Pro, MacBook Air, iMac, Mac Mini. It'll look great. Even a Mac Pro. So with that, I'm going to wrap up this segment. I think you guys are really going to like my conversation with Terry. Really smart guy. Obviously, he's a Photoshop expert. And I really like going to his YouTube page. I have to say, I've learned so much on just watching two or three of his videos that I watched right before I did the interview with him. And I did that so I knew what his voice sounded like in case an imposter was trying to sneak onto the show. Not really. I learned a lot. Just some techniques that I was like, oh, so that's how you do that. I had no idea. The first one that I watched, he was doing this reflection, how to make it look like someone standing on a piece of plexiglass where you actually see the reflection below them. I had no idea I know how I would do it. His way was much better. I was like, oh, well, I'm going to do that from now on. So after this interview, make sure you go to his website, and he's got a link to all his stuff. It's terrywhite.com. And I think you guys are going to really like getting to know Terry. If you've never heard of Terry before, you've never seen him in person, this is your introduction to him. Know that he will be at the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino for Photoshop World August 10th through the 13th in Las Vegas. So you can actually meet Terry and see him in person. So with that, here is my conversation with Terry White. And as I said at the beginning of the show, My guest today is Terry White, Principal Creative Cloud Evangelist for Adobe Systems Incorporated. Terry, what is the Principal Creative Cloud Evangelist? That's a mouthful, by the way.
It is, and it's actually longer than that, but that's the abbreviated version.
No way, it's longer than that, technically?
Yes.
Wow. I got to hear the full... You got to tell me now.
Well, the one I normally go by and when I put on cards is Worldwide Design and Photography Evangelist.
That is longer. Yeah. So what do you do for Adobe?
What do I do for Adobe?
I know you've been there for a long time.
Yeah, it'll be 19 years in July.
Wow.
And as of late, my job is to get people to understand and be motivated about the Creative Cloud products and offerings and services.
That's not a small task. I mean, the Creative Cloud is pretty much all of the Adobe products at this point.
Well, at least all the creative ones. I mean, we have the Creative Cloud products that people are traditionally known, like Photoshop, Illustrator, InDesign, so forth and so on. Then we have the Marketing Cloud. And then we also have the traditional document products, such as Acrobat, and products that I don't talk about on a daily basis. So we have lots of distinct product lines, but the biggest one that people know us for is the creative aspect or the creative.
Oh, that's the bread and butter right there.
Right.
So how long have you been a Photoshop user?
I've been a Photoshop user since, and that's a hard question to answer because I had it on my computer, but I wouldn't have called myself a user, but I've been using the product since Photoshop 2.5.
Wow, that's a long time ago.
That is a long time ago.
Do you think if someone put you in front of that version, you could still use it effectively?
Not 2.5.
No?
2.5 was before layers.
Right.
I would at least need version 3 that had layers. I don't think I could do anything much with 2.5.
Yeah, it's just a drawing program at that point.
Right. But it would run really, really fast on today's computers.
Oh, gosh, yeah. Yeah, if you could find a Mac, you'd either need what, Windows 3 or Mac OS 7?
Yeah, 7.
Oh, boy, that would... Hey, you know what, though? If you did have Mac OS 7 on today's hardware, it would be so fast.
Yeah, everything would be instantaneous.
Now, I want to ask you about your history, but first I have to ask this. What is 30 Days of Creative Cloud Tutorials?
Well, you know, yeah, everyone usually thinks about the beginning of the year, like, what are they going to do better or different or change at the beginning of the year? We call them New Year's resolutions. So I've had a podcast since, a video podcast since 2007, it used to be the Creative Suite podcast, now it's Creative Cloud TV. And one of the things I thought, you know, this year I kind of want to do more, you know, believe it or not, more videos. And I challenged myself to do 30 days straight of releasing a new video every day in the month of January, starting January 2nd. So from January 2nd to January 31st, a brand new video every day. Now, traditionally, I normally do them one every week to 2 weeks. So this was quite a shift in just commitment to do them every day.
You're a masochist. That's what it is, right?
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny, right around January 1st or 31st or December 31st, I was thinking, do I really want to do this? I haven't announced it. No one knows. You know, I can back out. But, you know, it's like once you start, then you can't not do it. So I said, well, if I release one and announce it, then I got to do all 30. And I did.
Well, I mean, that's a lot of work. It's not just recording the videos and editing and getting posted. It's coming up with content for
exactly.
30 different episodes.
That's the part that people really don't realize what goes on behind the scenes. Like, you can come up with an idea of how to retouch a portrait, for example, in
right.
Photoshop. But, okay, which portrait? Where are you going to get this portrait from? You really don't want to use someone you know and find all their flaws and their, you know, skin and everything. So you got to find a stock image. Then
yep.
You got to find an image that isn't already retouched. And it's a lot of work. It's much more work putting together the video than actually recording it. Recording it's only a few minutes, as long as the video.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Getting it all together, getting the files together. Testing it first, making sure that it's going to do what you're about to say it's going to do in the video. That's way more work than actually the video itself.
It's got to feel like a pretty big sense of accomplishment when you finally post that 30th video.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I was doing them, of course, I didn't record one a day. I was doing them anywhere from 3 to 5 at a time.
That's brutal.
And I had a trip out of town, so I had to cover... You know, because I was going to record when I was on the road, so I had to cover that entire week of videos before I left. So that was probably the hardest recording session.
The Adobe Creative Cloud TV video podcast, you have over 200,000 subscribers. Is that daunting at all when you're going to record a new video, knowing that potentially at least that many people will see it?
Yes.
But, I mean, you've got some videos up there that's got over 3.5 million views.
I know. And you're just really the hidden thing is you're looking at just YouTube. Like I said, it was a podcast on iTunes since 2007. YouTube, I've only been doing it on YouTube since 2009. So each one of those episodes you're looking at with thousands or millions of views on YouTube has at least that many or more as a download on my podcast.
Yeah, no pressure, right?
Yeah. So the videos are traditionally released in both places. Now, in this case, with the 30 days of videos, I decided to do them only in two places, only on YouTube and only inside my app, which is part of my podcast.
That's awesome.
So the people that bought my app got access to the 30 videos, or they will have access to all 30. And, of course, the people on YouTube get them.
Let's go back in time a little bit. We have something in common. I know that you're in Atlanta, Georgia now.
I am now, yes.
Because you're smart, you don't like the cold.
That's correct.
But
you did your research.
I did. And you went to college just north of me in Grand Rapids at Davenport.
Well, actually, it was back when I went, it was the Dearborn campus.
Right, I remember that. It changed probably 25 years ago?
Yeah, when I went, it was Detroit College of Business, and then it became Davenport University.
So you grew up in Michigan?
I did.
Where at?
I grew up in Detroit, and once I turned 21, 22, I moved out to the suburbs of Detroit. So Southfield, Troy, Detroit.
Yeah, and you got sick of the snow.
And I got sick of the snow. I've been sick of the snow for over 10 years. I just finally was in the right place, right time of my life to finally move out.
Do you ever get reminiscent wanting to go back when it's the holidays and you see
them? Not because of the snow, no. If I go back, it's to see my family, but no, it's never because of the weather.
Now, you were the one of the founders of the Macintosh User Group in Detroit, yes?
Correct. I founded MacGroup Detroit in 1986.
That group is still going?
Still going. Yeah, I was president and founder for since 1986 till 2014. And I finally said, hey, I'm moving, therefore I will not be president any longer.
Kind of hard to be president from a foreign land.
I will help you guys with the transition as best I can, but if the group continues, it's because you guys want to see it continue, and I will help that effort.
Now, how did that get started? How do you start up a user group?
My first advice is don't.
Don't.
Unless you're seriously committed to doing it. I honestly, back in 1986, I had started a desktop publishing business, if anyone remembers the term desktop publishing. And I was sitting in my office one day. I had an office in downtown Detroit, sitting there, and I was working with a client, and I was just trying to get to know more Mac users. And the guy I was sitting there talking to said, well, you know, I'm a such and such user. It might have been a Commodore, I can't remember, but he was using some other platform. And he said, you know, one of the things that I saw someone do was start a users group so that they could find more users of whatever that platform was. And I had the crazy idea back then, hey, I'll start a Macintosh users group. And that's how it started.
He probably had a Trash 80.
Yes. Yeah, it was either that or Commodore. I can't remember. It was one of the two.
So, by the way, I do want to mention, if people want to learn more about Terry, just go to terrywhite.com. And I'll also have a link at OWC Radio, episode number 30. We'll have a link right there to both the YouTube channel, terrywhite.com, and anything else Terry would like me to link to, including his Twitter account. Because you are, you're pretty active on Twitter, I've seen. And you seem to like The Walking Dead.
I do. Yeah, last night was that episode. But anyway, I won't, no spoilers. But I'm active on Twitter normally when I'm active at something else at the time. Like, for example, I don't tweet just to tweet. So if I'm doing something or watching something or involved in something or traveling somewhere or in front of something, I'll tweet about it. But just my day-to-day, I usually don't tweet about.
No, I think that's a good practice. There's I've found myself unfollowing some people because it's, I don't need to know the minutia when they're going to the bathroom.
Exactly.
You know, that's a little bit too much. I don't need to know that much.
Now, if I'm at a great restaurant, there's a great dish in front of me, I'll probably tweet a picture of it. But just, hey, I'm at McDonald's. No, you don't need to know that. It's just nothing special about that day.
So how did you wind up at Adobe?
That's another interesting one. Back in 1994. Yeah, that's when I started. 1994, 1997. Trying to think. No, 1996. Okay, 96. I had to go back a few years. I had my own training company. And because Adobe had acquired Aldis. So yep. I knew her as, you know, Sandy was my Aldis rep at the time. And she became, therefore, my Adobe rep because Adobe acquired the company. And I used to just, she used to come into my office just to check on things, and I used to give her so much crap about what I wanted to see in the products. And then I would imagine that she just got tired of hearing it and said, hey, we're hiring a market specialist. You should apply. And I did. And I got the job in it. And now I get to hear those conversations from my customers about what they are tired of and the stuff that they would like to see in the products.
Yeah. And how much weight do you give it when you hear that those kind of comments on Twitter or somebody commenting on a YouTube video? I mean, how much weight does that get?
Well, it depends. It depends on what the actual comment is. If someone is complaining for what I consider the sake of complaining,
oh yeah,
then I just, you know, like anything else, I just let it go in one ear and out the other. But if someone has a legitimate either A, concern, like something just flat out isn't working, or B, you know, a feature that either we hear the feature, you know, request all the time, or it is something, wow, that's new, I never thought of that, then I will try my best to elevate it and get it to the right person. But keep in mind, I'm not the person to send those requests to. I'm just saying if I happen to see them in passing, I will respond or react to them as best I can. Because we have a whole feedback system on our website. If you really are having an issue or really have a suggestion, you can do that on the website or contact Adobe even on Twitter, Adobe Care. But besides that, you know, comments on YouTube, as a matter of fact, if you go to my YouTube channel, 99% of my videos don't have comments on. And people are always asking me, well, why don't you have your comments on your video? And I explain to them because the comments are going to be one of three things. They're going to be A, oh my God, greatest video in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, we all love to hear that, but that really doesn't do anything for me. B, oh my God, the stupidest video in the world, and you should not even own a computer.
Yeah. I bet, okay. I know what the third one is.
Right. Third one. And the third one is a question that I usually don't have time to answer. So it's a, yeah, hey, I'm working on this photo, doing this specific thing, doing this thing that I'm trying to get done. Can I send you the photo so you can work on it?
And there is an expectation from some users that, you know, you're just sitting there trolling your own comments and looking to give free advice and help to people where, you right. know, it's, you can't do that. I mean, that would be a full-time job and a half if you did that.
Yeah. So I on the one hand, I appreciate the compliments. On the other hand, you know, the critiques about my free content, it's like I really don't need or care about.
Yeah.
And the questions, I can't do them justice. So it's no sense even asking because, you know, if 200,000 subscribers, if 50 people a day out of 200,000 ask me a question, I would never get anything else done.
That's a full-time job. Absolutely. Right. And the other questions are, you did that wrong, by the way. there's a better way of doing that.
Yes.
You're like, ugh, yes. Really? Of course there is.
Yeah, I count that as number two. That falls into the either we don't like the video because of this, that, or the other, or two, did you know you could do it this way?
Right. And that's the beauty about Adobe Photoshop and InDesign. There's so many different ways of accomplishing ostensibly the same task.
Right.
I watched one today from you that how you get the reflections, people send you questions like, are they standing on plexiglass? How are you getting this really cool reflection? And you made a video of how you do that.
Right.
There's three other ways that I could think of to do that.
Any of those videos, there are 50, 100 different ways to do it.
Yeah.
And I'm not professing that this is the best way or the only way. It's the way I do it.
Yeah, it's a way of doing it.
Right. And if you have a different way of doing it or even what you consider a better way, great. Do it.
So what's your take? Were you scared? Was you apprehensive when Adobe went to a subscription-based model rather than I'm going to the store and I'm going to buy this box and it has all the software I want in it for $700? Were you apprehensive?
I wasn't apprehensive because I got what we were trying to accomplish with that. And I also, the way I usually explain it to people is, everyone has their opinion of why and how, and it could have been different. You could have done both. All the things that people have said since day one. And I always, whenever I'm starting a seminar or a big talk and I'm doing a Creative Cloud kind of what's new or up to date, I always take them back a step and say, this is why. And let me explain it. If you go back in our software history or just software in general, upgrades where there are lots of new features are typically anywhere from, in Adobe's history on a regular basis, anywhere from 18 to 24 months.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so 1.5 to 2 years before you get updates with new features. Now think about that for a second. That's a luxury. That's, oh my God, you've got 2 years before you have to come out with something new and cool. Engineers, go to work. You got 2 years to do it. Now, that worked great in the 90s and before that. Now let's fast forward. And I like to take people back to the year that we introduced CS5. And at the same time, a small company we know called Apple introduced the iPad.
Yep.
Now, of course, at the time, two different companies introducing two different products that have nothing to do with each other. The iPad was the iPad. CS5 was CS5. The two never really, came up on anyone's radar as being combined or have anything to do with each other. But what the iPad did was it created a new market for our customers that said, hey, there's this new cool tablet that I want to get my digital, I want to make a publication on it. I want to get my existing publication and make it digital and put it out on this new cool device. So you might remember the first successful attempt at that for us was Wired Magazine.
I do remember.
So Wired Magazine, totally interactive, brand new on the iPad, brand new app. Well, of course, prior to that, there was no, boxed or packaged solution, I'll call it, for that. So we had to hand code Wired Magazine, working with their teams, to get that first app developed. Now, of course, Adobe's not in the business, just like I'm not in the business of answering everyone's tech questions, Adobe's not in the business of hand coding everyone's applications or needs or solutions. But imagine back then. And of course, with it being a success, imagine if you would think about it, all the other magazines saying, okay, great, this works, do me next.
Ouch.
And of course, we can't.
Right.
But imagine if we would have said, well, we're going to put the tools in InDesign for you to do it, and that'll come out in CS6, which is 2 years from now.
Yeah, no, that's not going to work.
So when you say it like that, it sounds silly that people would have to wait 2 whole years or even 18 months or even a whole year for something that just happened in technology that they'll be able to take advantage of.
Now, Adobe was one of the very first companies, big companies, to really embrace mobile computing. When I say mobile, I'm not talking about laptops because that's portable computing. That's totally different than mobile computing. I'm talking about Android tablets, the iPad, iPhone. You were there during this transition. Was it a scary transition at Adobe? It was like, oh my God, the paradigm is shifting. What are we going to do?
No,
or were you guys out in front of that right from the beginning?
It became challenging. And again, this is all more the reason for Creative Cloud. So we can't tell people they can wait 18, 24 months or even 12 months anymore. And the only way to effectively release software as quickly as you possibly can without revenue recognition issues in this country is to have it being that people are paying for it along the way and they get the updates as they come out. So that's where the join Creative Cloud or subscription plans came into play. Now, when you talk about mobile and apps, again, that's that whole process of trying to be in front of it or trying to at least be there with it as it's happening is all just gravy for the Creative Cloud customer. Because, for example, we can release apps as soon as we can, as soon as they're available, that take advantage of your existing Creative Cloud membership so that you're ready to go.
Other than Adobe, you've written 6 editions now of the iPhone book for Peach Pit Press.
Yes.
How's your workflow when it comes to writing books? How quickly do you turn one around?
Well, normally, with the first one, believe it or not, iPhone book version 1 was written literally in a weekend.
Wow, that's impressive.
Well, it was kind of one of those we wanted to have one of the first books out because this new device had just come out. And so I got tapped by a friend of mine, Scott Kelby, and said, let's do this book. And I said, okay, what's the deadline? And I'm thinking, you know, month, 2, 3 months, maybe. No, he's like Monday.
That sounds like Scott. Scott's been on this podcast, by the way.
Yeah, so he and I split it in half. We chose our topics, or he chose the topics and said, here are the ones you get to do. And we literally spent the entire weekend, phone in one hand, keyboard in the other, trying things and writing.
It's fun though, isn't it?
Yeah, it was because you know when you're under the gun like that, you learn at a very rapid pace because you have to literally go tap and touch every single thing and figure out what it does. Now, since then, all the subsequent books, of course, the turnaround time was much better. I didn't have to have them done in a weekend. But typically, I would say from the time we're given to go ahead on a book like that to get it from you haven't typed a single thing to finished, I would say it's still probably a month, you know, four weeks.
How much content can you reuse from a previous book?
Well, a lot of it can be reused. First of all, we always redo all the pictures, you know, so all the screenshots are redone with the new device, the new OS, the new whatever. And then we literally have to go and read every single thing that's already in the book and say, okay, does this still apply? If it doesn't apply, is it completely different now? Okay, then rewrite it, or does it just need to be tweaked?
How did you get the screenshots in the first versions? Because there was no developer tools then for you to plug in your phone and see the screen. How did you get your shots?
There is this amazing artist that Kelby has on staff that literally drew them in Photoshop.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah, well, think about this even before the iPhone book. Think about the iPod book.
Oh, yeah, that's true, too. Because you can't take a screen snapshot.
There are no screenshots. There are no screenshots. So every single screen in the book was drawn.
Wow. Now, I did a co-authored a iTunes iPod book, but I did the iTunes part, so I cheated. Yeah. I could do screen snapshots. It was great.
Yeah, it was always a pleasure when it's something in iTunes. Oh, I can take it from my Mac. It's great. It's just screenshot on the Mac. Perfect. Don't have to have Felix draw something.
What do you prefer? Do you prefer writing or do you prefer the video work that you're doing now?
Well, video is much easier, and I tend to be long-winded either writing or video, so it's much easier to be long-winded with video than it is with writing.
And you do get that immediate gratification as well.
Right.
Yeah. So how long have you been doing your blog?
Let's go back. It started out as an iWeb blog.
Yeah, that's been a while.
So it's got to be 2005, 2006.
That's a long time.
Or?
And you're still active on it. I mean, so many people started blogs. They probably 95% of every blog ever started has stopped. People just abandon them. But you continue to go on it.
Well, and the thing is, I often look at it and say, I feel guilty when I don't blog. So it's like, oh, God, I haven't written a blog post in 3 or 4 days. Back then, when I started, it was literally, I have to blog about something every single day, Monday through Friday, something. And then one day, years later, for whatever reason, traveling, didn't have content, whatever, I didn't. And the world didn't stop.
Yeah.
And then I was like, okay, the world didn't stop because I didn't blog today. And then the next time it was 2 days. And it was funny, one time I did get a comment, hey, you haven't written a blog post in 3 days. You're leaving us hanging. And I had to explain, back when I started it, I always had something to talk about, something new, something I hadn't talked about before, some new piece of hardware, gear, you know, whatever. I don't always have something new every day anymore. I'd rather blog about something that's real than to just make up stuff just to satisfy the blog request of having something each day.
And that's kind of goes along with the policy that you have for Twitter.
Yep.
As long-term listeners of this podcast know, I do have 3 random questions that I ask our guests. and we will get to those in a few minutes. Terry knows about the three random questions, but he has no idea what these questions are.
I have no clue of what they are, but I'm curious to see what you're going to ask.
And you know, it has nothing to do with your job or your background or anything. So keep that in mind. I do have a few questions left, though. When you went to Davenport, what you're doing now, you couldn't take classes in it then. It just didn't exist.
No.
So what did you go to college for?
Well, actually, believe it or not, my major was, I didn't finish, and my major was going to be accounting/data processing.
Oh, you'd still be living in Michigan miserable.
Yes. So I quickly realized, as much as I thought I was into numbers and accounting, I really wasn't. And the data processing stuff wasn't happening fast enough, because it was before everyone had a computer.
Yeah.
So it was bigger computers, you know, that would businesses would own. And it just wasn't happening fast enough, and I got bored.
What do your parents think? Are they still with you?
Yes. Well, they're proud of me. They don't really understand what I do for a living. But they're
happy that I
don't live with them, so that's all good.
How has SSDs changed your workflow?
Well, I couldn't imagine using a computer without an SSD. I was one of the early adopters, so I got whichever MacBook Pro was the first one Apple, besides the MacBook Air,
right?
The first MacBook Pro that Apple put an SSD in, I got that model, and I've had one ever since. I could never go back.
Yeah.
I remember when I first got it, a friend of mine who's an IT person was like, oh, I don't see why you're wasting your money. It only speeds up the boot time and the application startup time. And I just smiled and said, okay.
SSD makes a huge difference.
I know. If that's what you think,
yeah,
I'll let you have that. But
You didn't show him?
No, it's night and day. He had his mind made up. He's an IT person. I couldn't convince him.
Right. As a Photoshop user, I mean, there were some of the first users to really see advantages of SSD. I mean, it made Photoshop a whole different app.
Right. It just makes the whole computer a whole different thing. It's just, I couldn't imagine going back to my main drives being rotational drives.
What's your favorite non-Adobe software?
My favorite non-Adobe software. Well, there's favorite and the ones I use the most. There's two different things.
There's definitely two different things, yep.
The first one that came to mind, believe it or not, it's going to sound stupid, it's a utility. It's 1Password.
No, that doesn't sound stupid at all. I mean, that's invaluable to so many people.
I thought about it as like, that's one application I just could not live without on a day-to-day basis. Yep. I couldn't imagine it.
And
now,
today's day and age of remembering so many passwords, and you got to change them often, and it's a great piece of software.
I would say probably the next one is ScreenFlow, because that's the one I'm in doing all my tutorials and videos.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just looking now. I'm having to look at my doc and cheat.
Uh huh.
Chrome.
Chrome. You're a Chrome instead of Safari user.
Yeah,
so am I.
I'm a Chrome user. I've been a Chrome user for years. That's it. Because the rest are Adobe products. Can't really think of anything that I use regularly that's not an Adobe tool, because I'm a photographer by hobby, and that's what I, you know, that's what I do on the weekends. So I'm always in Lightroom. Lightroom's on my second monitor. I'm looking at it right now because that's the product I'm always in, and of course Photoshop.
Now, Apple got a lot of attention last week because they released this developer preview for Photos. What's your take on Photos? I mean, obviously, you guys have a competing product, although not really, because Photos
not
is
really.
More for consumers.
It's interesting that Apple and their what we would traditionally call their Pro product line, if you think about it, their Pro products were Final Cut Pro and Aperture.
Yep.
And in both cases, what I think, if I had, this is just my opinion, not Adobe's opinion, this is Terry White's opinion. If I had to go from what my gut tells me about Apple and their just the company they've become, is I wouldn't say don't care about pros anymore. What I would say what they care about more is reaching a broader audience.
Yeah. I would say that they ceded that market to you guys.
Exactly. So if you look at Final Cut Pro, which became Final Cut 10, and they dropped the price significantly, they basically said, yes, we could make this pro version that everyone has been waiting for years and years and years, 64-bit and everything else, that would only appeal to the top 1% of our customers.
Yep.
Or we could rethink video editing and apply and bring the price point way down to where we could tap that middle market, those prosumers, those people that are out on the weekends videoing. Now, that doesn't mean that a pro can't use Final Cut 10, but if you remember the response to Final Cut 10 when it first came out.
My response was what you're talking about. I wasn't happy about it.
Right. Most pros hated it.
Yeah. And they still do, to be honest. Right. I know a lot of video professionals that went from that product to your product. They went to Premiere.
Right. So we looked at it as, yay. I mean, we're happy. And of course, we were already kind of winning from the feature war standpoint because we had already been 64-bit. We had already started doing, you know, multicam work. We'd already been doing a lot of the things that customers were begging Apple to do. And so we were already there having the product basically with open arms saying, yes, come to us. We're happy. We can give you the thing you've been wanting. It's already here and it runs on your Mac and it runs great. And not to mention it's cross-platform. So from that standpoint, it's been a great transition from the video tools. Now we go to the photo tools and we look at Aperture and Apple basically saying the same thing.
Yeah, well, that's exactly what I was getting at.
We're going to make this brand new app because iPhoto is kind of long in the tooth and doesn't do a lot of things that we want. It's kind of cumbersome for most people. So we're going to take a new approach, brand new approach, make a photos app that's basically iOS 8 photos on your Mac.
Mm-hmm.
And when I looked at it, that's exactly what it feels like.
That's what I feel like when I'm looking at it, too. The videos that I've seen from such people as David Pogue and The Verge, it looks like a larger screened iPad version. It's not necessarily a bad thing for consumers, but for professional photographers.
You think about that middle to low-end market, middle range market, and especially basically everyone that uses photos on a Macintosh that isn't a photographer.
Which is everybody nowadays.
Right, they'll be happy with it. But if you're a pro photographer, you're gonna be basically in more shock than the Final Cut users were, because none of the professional tools are in it.
No, none.
Right, none of the management, none of the professional things you were used to from Aperture are in Photos. So therefore, you're probably gonna be happier with Lightroom.
You only get to take one with you. You're gonna be gone for a month. Is it the iPhone or the iPad?
Hands down, iPhone.
Yeah. I cheated, and I read your blog, so I know that you're an iPhone 6 Plus user like I am.
Right.
How much do you like the new iPhone 6 Plus?
It's funny. It's just like I used to tell people about when they get a faster computer.
Yeah.
When you get that faster computer, it's amazing the first day. And then all of a sudden, it's, you know, a week later, 2 weeks later, it's good. You're happy, but it's like you don't feel like it's amazing anymore. Until you go back to the old one.
Yeah. Yep, absolutely.
Same thing with the phone. When someone hands me their 5 or even their 4S, and I can barely see the thing anymore. It's like, am I still holding the phone anymore?
I'm with you. I thought the 5 was fine until I got my 6 Plus, and it's just like, oh my God, I've been waiting for this for so long. And then I go back to my wife's 5, and I'm like, why is the screen so small?
So small.
Yeah. Yeah, once you get used to it, it's hard to go back.
Once you get used to it, it's almost impossible to go back. So I always say the test for me is I'll try something, and then if I don't like it when the next version comes out, I'll go back, you know, to the previous whatever it was I had. So for example, whatever the new one's going to be this year, the 6 Plus S or the whatever they call it. That would have been my escape plan if I didn't like the 6 Plus. I would just go down to the 6S or whatever they call it, smaller version.
Right.
But I have no plans of going down now.
What can they really do with the next version of the 6 Plus? Because I was talking to somebody about this on another show, and I like the 6 Plus so much. It's so fast. The screen is so great. The pictures are fantastic. What's the new version going to do other than maybe storage space? I can't think of anything.
If you think about all the, I call them the interim models, because Apple usually has one design that they keep for two years.
Right.
So if you think about this next, the 2015 model being the interim model, it'll be all the stuff we always expect. Faster processor, slightly faster, you know, this, or more, like I said, more storage space, cheaper, or, you know, it will have some little bell and whistle that
if they come out with
to make you want to upgrade, but someone coming in that was on a 5 or 5S, right, they're going to be extremely happy.
If they come out with a sapphire display for the next version, I'm going to be not happy at all. That's the only thing that I would really, really like on the 6 Plus is a sapphire screen.
Right. My only regret on the 6 Plus versus the 5S I had was actually the size. Not screen size, but the capacity.
Mm-hmm.
I had a 5S that was 64 gig, and I'm thinking, I don't remember running out of room on that. I should be fine if I go to a 6 Plus with 64 gigs. And in theory, I am still fine, meaning I'm not running out of space every day, but I wished I'd gotten a 128.
And you know why? It's because the 6 Plus is, you're more efficient with it.
And plus, I would be doing something I'm doing now more than I was doing, which is videos.
Yeah, and that takes up space quickly.
Videos on the phone than I was, because maybe it's bigger, easier to hold, easier to see. I don't know. But I just find myself capturing more stuff now.
It's a great video camera.
Yeah, so whatever this next version is, my excuse will be I need the 128 version. I don't really care about any of the other features.
Maybe we'll get a 256. Could you imagine that? That would be awesome.
And see, then it's going to really freak me out because I'm going to say, huh, do I really?
Yeah, maybe I'd just go with the 128. I don't know if I really need 256. That'd be a
really
lot.
256, or can I get by with the 128? So everyone that I ever knew that is complaining about their iDevice is because they didn't get enough storage. They wish they had gotten the bigger one.
And Apple got bit in the butt when it came to people doing the over-the-air updates, yes, and they didn't have enough space.
Right.
Yeah. I've never done over-the-air updates. I've always done it via my Mac.
And see, I've always done over-the-air until I couldn't that one time. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, oh, well, because all my friends were deleting things. I said, why don't you just plug it in?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, you can still do that? Yeah, you can plug it in and update.
Terry White's going to be at Photoshop World August 10th through the 13th at the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino. Hopefully I will be there. I'm not sure yet. As part of OWC, it's something that we're looking at.
I think you guys would do good there.
I think so, too. And I know it's a fantastic event. I know people who's gone to it. A good friend of mine, David Avery, who works for Adobe, says I should go there every year. So one of these days, I'm going to have to do that.
You know, everyone there has the same problem, storage.
Mm-hmm.
So every storage company does pretty good there because everyone needs storage.
I've teased it the whole show, so here we go. It's time for three random questions. You are sitting down, Terry, right?
I am. Here we go.
Okay, here's the first question. Who is the first person you call when you have a bad day?
First person I call when I'm having a bad day. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say, it's the truth. Usually if I'm frustrated or having a bad day because of something, I call Scott Kelby, because he and I have been friends for so long, and we are, you know, been through a lot of similar things. He's the one that I know is going to understand whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. Does he ever take you out to these sporting events that he likes to photograph?
You know, he's never offered because he knows I'm not a sports guy. I'm like, it would be a waste of a trip for him to take me.
You don't think it'd be cool to be on the sidelines of an NFL game?
No, don't get me wrong. I would die to shoot a game for the experience of shooting a game. But at the same time, I didn't know who was going to be in the Super Bowl to the day of the Super Bowl. I just don't care.
It's not your thing.
It's not my thing. So yep. If you're into it, great. More power to you. But he knows I'm not into it. So if he's got an extra ticket to take someone to a game, he's going to take someone who's going to be excited.
I would love to be on the – I know he doesn't root for the same teams I do. But, boy, just to be on the sideline of an NFL game would be fantastic.
If he said, hey, I got this opportunity in Atlanta to shoot a game, you want to go, I'd be jumping there, because I've never shot a game before for the experience of shooting a game. And he would still have to tell me who's playing.
Question number two of our three random questions. When was the last time you swam in a pool?
The last time I swam in a pool was... I'm trying to think how far back it was. Maybe it was last year sometime. I'm just trying to remember when and where.
Mine was last year. 2 years ago. So yours is last year. Where at? Was it the Mandalay Bay?
No, that was before that. Last year, I was out of the country in Cancun, so it had to be Cancun.
Awesome. How was that trip?
Awesome.
Was it vacation or was it work?
Vacation.
Oh, that's good. Then you can enjoy it.
Yep.
Last one, and you have to pick one of these to do. You don't have a choice. I'm not going to say someone has a gun to your head because that's too crass, but you have to pick one of these two.
I have to pick one of those two.
One of these two. Bungee jumping or skydiving?
Skydiving.
Really? That was a quick response. Why?
Yeah. Because skydiving is actually something I've always thought about doing. The whole bungee jumping thing and that snap back up, you know, when you reach the end of the cord, that doesn't appeal to me as much as just free falling. So, yeah, that's an easy one, actually.
I've never been skydiving, but I have done something similar to bungee jumping. It's where they put this big metal cord on you, and they just basically drop you, and you swing out. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've ever seen that.
Yeah, I've seen it.
I thought that would be a lot better than skydiving, because skydiving scares me. And I think it was worse, because you can still count the blades of grass below you. So you really know how far up you are, and it's not that far.
Right. That I don't know. It's just somehow I'd feel more comfortable depending on a parachute than I would a cord.
If people want to learn more about you, Terry, where should they go online?
I would say the hub for everything is terrywhite.com.
Awesome. Any big plans coming up in the near future other than the Photoshop world?
Well, I have a couple of photo shows I'm going to. One is photo imaging. I think it's in the Netherlands, or actually it's in, it's in Benelux. It's in the Amsterdam region. So that is coming up the end of March. And I have a creative jam actually coming up February 26th here in Atlanta. That's all about graphic design and creativity. And I'm actually working on some events possibly in New York in the March timeframe for what I'm going to call a photo jam. So it's kind of a photo walk kind of competition kind of thing, you know, all in one.
Terry, sounds like you really love what you're doing.
I do.
What advice would you give to somebody who wants to do something similar?
First of all, don't do anything, you know, don't live your life doing something you really don't like doing. So you're never going to be happy. Even if you're making a ton of money, you're not happy if you're not happy. So if you're not happy doing your day-to-day job, if Monday is one of those things that comes around and you cringe, then I would say, first of all, take some self-inventory and say, what do you really like to do? And then find a way to make that your day-to-day job.
Awesome. Terry White is the Principal Creative Cloud Evangelist for Adobe Systems. Thanks very much for being on OWC Radio this week.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.